to go back to the bombs.
Persuade me.
1,200 lives.
Lives? Not many lives, that. I mean, not in the great scheme of things. Remember what the goldfish said? There must be a god. I mean, who changes the water? Specks in the universe, Captain. Launch your lifeboats.
There must be a god. I mean, who changes the water? What a great line. What a fantastic line. Hi, and welcome back to another Movie Mug. I'm Steve Piggott. Now, before we get to this week's film, I'd just like to take a couple of minutes to briefly mention Indiewood Films. It's a UK project, a UK startup, to bring an exciting new vision of horror to our screens. Debutante writer and director Anthony Lane has been on a personal crusade to get his film made completely independent and completely financed by the fans. The title is Invasion of the Not Quite Dead, which is, an interesting little title. And it's a horror film, obviously, concerning a deadly virus unleashed on an island off the coast of England, not the coast of Costa Rica, and a troop of survivors must band together in a new take on survival horror. Now, he's been fundraising for 4 years already, and it's recently gone into production, starting work on the intro to the story, which takes place in 1978, 32 years before the main story. On the website, their main website, indiewood.co.uk, that's indiewood.co.uk, you can have a look at a 30-second teaser they've put together of some of the footage they've shot so far. And it's very, very good. It clearly shows that, well, A, he's obviously deadly serious about what he's doing. B, he's obviously quite skilled. He's got the chops to make this film, and that's quite clear. But C, that also this is an exciting project. This is something which has really, really captured my imagination. It's something that anybody and everybody can be involved in. Basically, he is very, very cleverly selling producer packages to finance the film. So for, the price of, what, a DVD, couple of pints, a Chinese meal, you can become a film producer, literally a film producer, and essentially donating to the film. You can give as much as you like. There are set packages at set prices that give you different levels of perk, but any donation at all is obviously going to be greatly received and helps to go towards the most exciting part, which is actually getting the film made in the first place. But there are a lot of cool perks. Like I said, first and foremost, the film can be made, and that's the most important thing. But you can get your name in the production credits. You get a copy of the finished film. If you live in the UK, there's the opportunity to be a zombie extra in the film. I mean, how cool is that? How else do you get that kind of opportunity? There's movie merchandise. There's all sorts of bits and pieces depending on the level of support you give. And it's already got the backing of some serious people. Kevin Pollock, Tom Savini, the effects specialist, David Hess. Who's a horror legend from Last House on the Left. Ken Russell, who according to IMDb is also going to be in it. Gaylane Hurd, the producer of Aliens. Lee Boardman, Jonathan Ross, the Mr. Ross, and Wheatus, the band who are going to be doing some original music for the film as well. Now, go to indiewood.co.uk or follow him on Twitter at indiewoodfilms, or one word. Every month he's doing this kind of Twitter-thon. He's staying up for extended hours. He's just finished one this weekend for 55. He actually did 57 hours straight, raising awareness, raising donations. I'm a producer. I've got on board. You don't have to spend a fortune to get involved, and you can get some really, really nice little perks. Let's try and get Invasion of the Not Quite Dead not only a success, but I want to get this film made, not only for it to be a success, but I just want to see a kick-ass zombie movie. I really, really just want to see this film. Indiewood.co.uk, indiewood.co.uk. Pledge some support, become a film producer, and let's get this film made. This week's movie is brought to you by the letters L, U, C, O, Z, A, D, and E. or Lucozade. Now, I know it's the movie mug, but I'm a bit of a hay fever sufferer, and the pollen count must be up today or reasonably high because I can feel it in my throat. And if you're a hay fever sufferer yourself, you know what I'm talking about. But bit of Lucozade, it's raspberry flavour, and it's soothing my throat and easing that tickly kind of nasty feeling that you get in the back of your nose. So today I'm on Lucozade. I'm not on coffees. It's not in a mug. I'm just drinking it out of the plastic bottle it came into. But nevertheless, it is a different beverage from last time. So there you go. Lucozade is the drink of choice. But onto the film today. 1974. I was a mere 2 years old when this film came out. So obviously it was a while before I saw it. But it's another film that I would have seen at a reasonably young age on, you know, another battered videotape from my VHS dungeon. Is it a dungeon? Well, it's in the loft. Can you have a dungeon in the, above your head? Yeah, I guess so. Dungeons are usually associated with beneath your feet, I guess, underground. But anyway, an unknown maniac is threatening to blow up a luxury ocean liner with 1,200 passengers on board unless he is paid a hefty ransom or unless an expert Navy bomb disposal team can disarm them first. This film stars Richard Harris, it's got Omar Sharif, David Hemmings, Tony Hopkins, Ian Holm, Freddie Jones, and it's directed by Richard Lester, and it is 1974's Terror on the Britannic, or as I know it, and it's probably more famously known as Juggernaut, inspired by a true story, no less, inspired by a story about bombs on a boat. And by the way, this is not Speed 2. The ocean liner Britannic, SS Britannic, has undergone a refit. It's still being refitted, actually. It's one of the sort of things about the film is that parts of the ship are off limits and there's things that aren't quite right. So it's still being refitted whilst it's, you know, at sea. And it's, you know, it's been bought kicking and screaming up to date. 37 years ago. Anyway, it's looking pretty tired if it was a ship these days. But there's 1,200 passengers aboard, and it's captained by Alex Brunel, who's played by the great Omar Sharif, who does a lot of chewing in this film, shall we say. It sets sail oblivious to the fact that there are 7 shipyard oil drums planted on board with intricate booby-trapped bombs inside. Now, the cruise itself is less than appealing, it has to be said. Sets up quite nice at the beginning of the film that it's not a particularly fantastic cruise to be on. There are some faulty gyros in the ship, which is, you know, probably down to cheap tender manufacturing, as is the want of these big companies who try to get things as cheap as they possibly can. And it paints a less than idyllic picture of seasick passengers and waiters swaying through the corridors, delivering breakfast trays. They get jogged from back to front from the waves. Dogs are walked along the rain soaked because the weather's appalling. Poop decks, literally, and games of bingo and fancy dress and stuff like that. Nobody's in the mood. Nobody wants to get involved. And then Nicholas Porter, who's the owner of the Sovereign Line, played by Ian Holm, the great Ian Holm, gets a call from a mysterious unknown assailant, the bomber, basically, who just wants to be known as Juggernaut, demanding a ransom of £500,000, half a million pounds, otherwise the bombs dig or boom. Enter our hero, the self-appointed undefeated champion Anthony Fallon, Lieutenant Commander Fallon, an expert in bomb disposal from the Navy, who we first see disarming a bomb in a museum. And he's disarming a bomb made from a Family Circle biscuit tin. Now, if you're English, you'll know what, if you're English and you're kind of my age, you'll remember what those are, these horrible red biscuit tins that you would get usually at Christmas with, you know, all the sort of like old family favourite, you know, custard creams and stuff like that that you get in these biscuits. And someone's made a bomb out of this thing. And I always smile and chuckle when I see that scene. But he's called to the ship by the government with his team to disarm the bombs before the deadline, which is dawn the next day, about 16 hours. A 16 hour deadline to pay the ransom. So they get on board the boat, which is already at sea, so they have to get on it first. Should have been a lot more tense, dramatic getting on board the boat sequence. But they start off, they find the bombs, well, they know where the bombs are already. They start by trying to drill into one with a kind of remote mechanical arm. That ends in disaster and ends in a few deaths. So they then, you know, to try and get into these bombs, they then split up, taking a bomb each with his team. Fallon's leading the way in drilling and cutting and snipping through the device to get to the triggers and the detonators. Now, back in London, whilst all this is going on, the hunt for Officer Juggernaut is going on. They're trying to track this guy down. Nicholas Porter, Ian Holmes' character, wants to just pay it, and get rid of it. But the government tell no, we're not negotiating with terrorists in their staunch, you know, way they do things. But so the police, led by Superintendent John McLeod, played by Sir Anthony Hopkins, whose wife and kids just so happened to be aboard the ship. So there you go, nice little bringing it all together. Now, also in this film, we've got David Hemmings. The cast of this film is exceptional, really, really good. David Hemmings plays Charlie, he's one of Fallon's team. Obviously, he's David Hemmings, most famous for his terms as Thomas in the 60s film Blow Up. And I remember him more recently as Cassius in Ridley Scott's Gladiator, which he played a fantastic role in that. We've got Shirley Knight as Barbara Bannister, and that's kind of like Captain Sharif's love interest, you know, voice of reason among the passengers, I guess, a little bit kind of humanity to it, as their fate is played out in the bowels of the ship with these bombs. Clifton James pops up as an American ex-politician tourista. Now, he's probably best known as Sheriff J.W. Pepper in Live and Let Die, and then in The Man with the Golden Gun, he's the guy sitting in the car with Bond when they jump that river, you know, and you're not thinking, I sure am, boy, and they jump that river. And then if you've seen it on YouTube, they've added the whistle effect, which is hilarious. But he's in there as the token Americans aboard the ship. Roy Kinnear, the great Roy Kinnear, pops up as the ship's court jester, who so poignantly points out in one scene, a nice little scene that he gets, in that he's supposed to be the morale officer, he's supposed to be the guy, and he does throughout the film. He's trying to keep people motivated and upbeat, and he mentions at one point in a scene with Shirley Knight that he's supposed to be the guy who's bringing laughs and smiles, but he himself is shit scared. So, you know, a nice little scene there for him. Julian Glover, Commander Mardo, who is constantly being battered and berated by Richard Harris's character. Fine actor, Julian Glover. General Veers in Empire Strikes Back, amongst many other things. The chief bad boy in Indiana Jones and Last Crusade, Walter Donovan. Really, really fine actor. And then there's Freddie Jones as Sidney Buckland. Now, spoiler. It really isn't a spoiler, to be fair, but it might be to some degree. But it's the worst kept secret in the film. He comes on at the beginning of the film as basically the voice of Juggernaut. He is Juggernaut. He is the Juggernaut bomber, an ex-teacher of Fallon, who's kind of a bit pissed off with the government pension for all his years of service given to the country. But very early in the film, he shows up. But you only see him from the mouth down in like a public call box making these phone calls about what's going on. And you've got to be a real idiot to not recognise his voice. You really don't, you know. It's thinly disguised by this metal mouth guard that he puts into his mouth, and I can't even imagine how that must have kind of, you know, just the taste, just the talking about it leaves a taste of metal in my mouth, which is, ugh, I just hate the idea. So really thinly disguised voice, but he is the bomber. It's a good cast, a really, really good cast, some really, really top draw actors in this. And it's a really well acted film. I really, really like everybody in this. Nobody really lets it down. The people who chew up the scenery are supposed to chew up the scenery, and the people who give it its heart and its depth also give it that as well. Richard Harris, as the hero, plays a kind of, I guess he is a hero, plays the kind of gruff, you know, my shit don't stink champion. The intro titles text that you had, text not bloody text is it the title speech at the beginning was from about three quarters of the way through the film, where he's kind of given up a little bit. His teammate's just been killed, and he goes back to then disarm a section of the bomb that just killed his teammate, and he proposes himself as this kind of undefeated champion, you know, hard ass, you know, deals with death every minute. And he's about to do this move on a bomb, and his hand starts to tremble. And the undefeated champion, you know, he shows his human side after all, and he realises his own mortality. And he's then got to stop and regain the champion aspect of it. A little bit of a Miyagi moment as well. But nice scene, well played. Richard Harris, quality actor. Everybody does well. Everybody does well, in spite of it being quite a plodding film, really. It takes a long time to get where it's going. The score's not very good. It doesn't get you going the way a modern film might. You sort of shoehorn you into it, you know, with lots of music and dramatic moments and whatever. It's quite plodding. There's no real whiz bang effects. There's no real directional flair from the man Richard Lester, who would later give us, you know, films like Superman 2 and 3. But nonetheless, I find it a riveting watch. It's a good film. I like it. And maybe it is in the lack of what I just mentioned that its real charm comes through. You know, the sequences of disarming the bombs with, you know, there's no Hollywood style stings, you know, that happen with the tension scenes of disarming the bombs, you know, and perhaps a modern day remake, you know, would add the orchestral, you know, dum dum dum, all that kind of stuff. And I think maybe it's better without it. But saying that, you know, after you've seen the Joker scene in The Dark Knight with that escalating whine, you know, sort of like ramping up what's happening, I doubt I'll ever see a more tense scene than that ever in my life. But I also quite like to poke fun at the age of the film. I mean, it's 37 years old now, so obviously it's going to show the cracks of how old it is. But early in the film, you get two kids playing an arcade machine on the ship, and it's called ping pong, you know, the classic bat and ball game, and they're having a whale of a time of it. And it's just like, you look at it and you think that, I mean, that was the only one on the ship that you could see. There's a quite a good scene where the police are trying to track down Juggernaut, and he makes a phone call, and they find out where he's calling from, and they rush over in the you know, Ford Cortina or whatever it is, police car, to get there, and only to find two handsets kind of stuck together, you know, sort of relaying the call from wherever he really is, and one of the coppers calls him a crafty sod, and it just shows its age fantastically. But nevertheless, it's still a good one, and I really enjoy it. I think that you have to be in the right frame of mind. It's a good sort of Sunday afternoon, you know, just sort of sit back and kind of relax and watch it. Remake potential on this film is very, very low, especially after Speed 2 kind of killed any future bomb on an ocean liner plot. And maybe that's for the best, to be fair. But it's what sets it apart from the others is a stellar cast. Some proper tense moments. You know, essentially, they've only got a toolkit and a multimeter to disarm a bomb that these days you'd use a netbook or a MacBook to do, kind of thing. And I have to say, I love the poster. I love the poster. Go to Wikipedia, type in Juggernaut or Terror on the Britannic, and look at the poster, and it's got this, it's like an old school cinema poster, you know, painted cinema poster. It's got the ship painted and a huge hole in its side, and then above the top it's got this little tagline and four yellow strips of like a sort of teletype kind of material kind of thing, and it says, "You will pay me $1.5 million, obviously that was the exchange rate, I guess, by dawn, or the world's greatest luxury liner will rip open like a can of sardines, and 1,200 men, women, and children will die. Good day, Juggernaut, a terrorist with manners." You gotta love it. And that's this week's movie mug, bottle, thing. Yeah, you know what I mean.